I look around and I see a country I don't even recognize. I see people with faces not like mine. I see people that I don't even know what they're saying. They can't even talk to me. And I look around and I think, where did all these people come from? But most importantly, I think, how do we get rid of them?
Welcome to episode 260 of the Solid Monster Sounds Off on SEScoops.com. It is Saturday, February 16th, 2013. I am the Solid Monster. Hope everybody's having a good President's Day weekend here in the States. Get a day off from work on Monday. I know not everybody does. Hopefully you are one of the lucky ones. We're going to talk about the Elimination Chamber pay-per-view, which is coming up tomorrow night from New Orleans, as they say. Perhaps the site of WrestleMania 30. WWE is actually having a press conference on Monday at noon, I believe, either noon or 1 o'clock. And nobody knows exactly what they're going to announce, but if I were a betting man, I would suggest that WrestleMania will be announced for New Orleans at the Superdome. That seems to be the news going around. That's been the news for a while now. I figured they were going to make the announcement tomorrow night during the pay-per-view, you know, air one of those videos for WrestleMania next year, and they might. Perhaps they'll announce it tomorrow night and have the formal press conference for it on Monday. I guess we'll find out. Before we get to all that stuff, I just want to make mention here at the beginning, for those of you who don't already know, I am a contributor to JBL's website, layfieldreport.com, and my latest column is actually up, went up this morning in the wrestling and MMA section with the headline, "Why is Colt Cabana not in WWE?" That is the title of the column. It ties into the Elimination Chamber this weekend. A lot of former ROH talents, if you'll notice, that are on the card. CM Punk, of course, challenging The Rock for the WWE Championship. You've got Daniel Bryan in the Elimination Chamber match. You've got Seth Rollins, the former Tyler Black, former world champion, part of the Shield, up against John Cena, Sheamus, Ryback. You've got Cesaro defending the U.S. title against The Miz. You've got all these different names, even guys that aren't on the card who have made it or almost made it. Nigel McGuinness, you know, basically, you know, was in WWE. He was as good as in, and then he had the deal pulled. We all know that story. Austin Aries is another one in TNA. So why is Colt Cabana the odd man out? You know, the guy's talented. He's a good wrestler. He's an even better entertainer. You would think that's right up WWE's alley. And best friends with CM Punk, one of the biggest stars in the company. Why is Colt Cabana not in WWE? That's the column. So you can go on Layfield Report and check it out. It's also on my Twitter. Colt Cabana actually read the column and it's funny, he tweeted me a message basically saying that when he was an extra once in WWE, he was caught staring at Stephanie McMahon's brand new breasts. And I would imagine that probably is an awkward moment. Actually, we might have just figured out the reason. Perhaps that's why. I don't know, but he read the column and you should too, so go back and check it out and leave me some feedback. Let me know what you think. Also, for those of you who are fans of The Walking Dead TV show, just want to make mention that I am also now the official Walking Dead blogger for layfieldreport.com. For anyone wondering why I'm doing a Walking Dead review for JBL's website, besides the fact that I love the show, last weekend's mid-season premiere pulled in a record 12 million viewers, over 7 million of which was in that all-important 18 to 49 demo, which makes it the best in cable history. You know, there's a did-you-know fact that I don't think we'll be seeing on Raw anytime soon. So, yeah, check out my review this week. I'll be doing them for the next 6 or 7 weeks, however long the season lasts. I think there were 8 or 9 episodes total for the second half of the season, and we've only had one so far, so there's a whole bunch more left to come. This week is the exception. Normally, they will be going up late Sunday night after the show airs. This weekend is the exception, given the Elimination Chamber. So that new review for Walking Dead should be up on Monday for those of you who are interested in that. Also, one other quick note that I literally just saw on my Facebook page before I started recording. Somebody posted a photo that was taken. It looks like it was taken at Madison Square Garden. A person who seems to work for the Knicks got a picture with Vince and Shane McMahon. I don't know when Vince and Shane were in the same place together, but they were. This is a recent photo. You will not believe what Shane McMahon... I haven't seen a photo of Shane McMahon in a while, but I did see him... It might have been last year, actually, on television. I think it was at a golf event of some kind on CBS. It wasn't that long ago that I saw an image of Shane McMahon. And he didn't look radically different from the way I remembered him. Take a look at him in this picture. Facially and everything, he looks the same, but take a look at his hair. You've got to see this photo. I could not believe it when I saw this picture. So it's up on my Facebook page, facebook.com/thesolomonster. So go there and check it out. It's unbelievable. Let's get to the Elimination Chamber pay-per-view, if we can. New Orleans, Louisiana, tomorrow night. It is the road to WrestleMania continues. We'll just run down the card really quick here, give some thoughts, predictions, all that good stuff. Start with the main event. Of course, the WWE Championship on the line. Big rematch from last month, The Rock. This time is the champion, so he's going into this match defending his title against CM Punk, who is now the former champion. They added a stipulation this past Monday night that if The Rock gets himself counted out or disqualified, he will lose the championship. And I figure, you know, perhaps they'll do a deal where the Shield interferes and attacks Punk to, A, cause the DQ, which means Punk gets the belt back, or B, prove that, in fact, Paul Heyman and CM Punk are not aligned with the Shield. Because if the Shield attacks Punk, well, then in their minds, you know, there could be no affiliation between them. We're attacking him. How can we be with him? Even if they do that, I'm sure Vince, you know, will be out there to overturn the decision, much like he did at the Rumble last month. Rock's going to win this match. I don't know that there's too much doubt about that. So I figure, you know, Rock's my pick, obviously. Or they can do a deal where maybe there's a ref bump in the match, lights go out, everybody thinks it's the Shield, since that's their MO from last month when the lights went out, but instead, it's the Undertaker, and he helps cost CM Punk the match. I'm not really sure how you would explain that, and personally, I would hold off on kicking off the whole Punk-Undertaker feud if they are going in that direction. I would wait until Raw the next night. That is, again, if Undertaker is in fact wrestling at WrestleMania, which, as I've said before, I'm positive he's going to wrestle. At this point, I would be shocked if Undertaker said, I can't do it. So, yeah, Rock by a mile in that match. I'm looking forward to it, though. I'm curious to see. You know, again, I thought the match between them last month was pretty good. I enjoyed that match, I think, more than Rock versus Cena at WrestleMania last year. Now they've got the stip. You know, they're going to have to do something funky at the finish, probably, but should be a good match. The Shield in a six-man tag team match against John Cena, Sheamus, and Ryback. I still think my idea for a War Games style match inside the chamber would be a better way to blow off this feud between these guys, but I still think it'll be a hell of a match. I mean, if it's anything close to the six-man tag we saw with The Shield at TLC, it'll be worth the price of the pay-per-view alone. And that's high standards to live up to, because for me personally, that was my match of the year in WWE. In 2012, I went into that pay-per-view. I was at that pay-per-view in Brooklyn. I didn't go into it expecting too much. And I was, by that match, I was blown away. You know, being there live, it was fun. The match was good. They had some innovative spots in there. They didn't bury the Shield. In fact, the Shield won. And they didn't win by, you know, slipping on a banana peel or some fluky finish. They won fair and square, hard-fought battle. It shocked me. And I don't know if the outcome of this match is going to shock me so much. I'm expecting John Cena, Sheamus, and Ryback to win. They're my picks in this match. I had one person email me, very, very concerned at the idea that the Shield may actually lose this match at the pay-per-view. And my thought on it is this. You know, if they win, obviously they look even more dominant. I have been pleasantly surprised with how they have booked the Shield so far. Because I thought for sure, if not at TLC, not long after, the Shield would have what they had coming to them. You know, the Shield were going to be brought down a peg or two, and that hasn't happened yet. They've been very patient. I think they've done about as good of a job with three new guys as they could possibly do. You know, they're going out there, and it's not like they're just jumping a bunch of nobodies. They're going out there, they're attacking Ryback, they're attacking Randy Orton, they're attacking Sheamus, they're attacking Kane, they're attacking John Cena, they're attacking headline main event guys, world champions, former world champions. And they have yet to be beaten. Now, granted, this is only going to be their second match, technically. My thought on the whole thing is, if they lose in a competitive match, if they lose in a match that was as competitive as the TLC match, the Shield's going to be just fine. They don't have to win this match. I mean, I would love to see them win this match, but it almost doesn't make sense for them to win this match, given that, if nothing else, you've got John Cena, who's wrestling for the championship at WrestleMania. You would think they would want to keep the momentum going with Cena heading into the biggest pay-per-view of the year. You know, and these are the three biggest baby faces in the company right now. Cena, Sheamus, and Ryback. I just can't not see them winning this match unless somebody turns on, you know, somebody on that team turns on the other to set up a WrestleMania feud, which I just don't see happening. I mean, if Randy Orton were in this match with the rumors of him possibly turning heel, I could see something where Orton turns on Sheamus or does something, you know, walks out on the team or something like that. But Orton isn't in the match, and I just can't see that happening. Like I said, I can't believe they've done as strong of a job as they have with the Shield. If they lose here, my hope would be they use it as an opportunity to actually start featuring these guys in more singles matches and more tag team matches on television so we can get to know them a little bit better. You know, we know that Dean Ambrose, for example, is a good talker. We know Dean Ambrose and Seth Rollins are great wrestlers. And Roman Reigns is a big, strong guy who's got a really good look. That's about all we know about these guys in terms of their WWE career so far. It would be nice to see their personalities shine through a little bit more and maybe see, you know, Rollins and Ambrose or you know, Rollins and Reigns go after the tag team titles or something like that. So at some point they're going to have to lose, and I feel that when they do lose, if anything, it might be the best thing for them because then they can finally start to branch out and do other things instead of just, you know, running out of the crowd and attacking people. That's all well and good, but after a while, that shit gets old. SmackDown Elimination Chamber match. All former world champions in this match. World's Strongest Man, Mark Henry, Randy Orton, Chris Jericho, Jack Swagger, Kane, and Daniel Bryan with Rey Mysterio out of the chamber. Jack Swagger is in. He earned his spot on Raw Monday night, as is Kane, who also earned a spot with his victory over Dolph Ziggler. I like the fact that it's not easy to predict a winner in this match. I don't look at this lineup and say, okay, we know who's winning. There really is no clear-cut winner here when you look at the men who are in the match. Realistically, you've got three, maybe four real possibilities. You've got, you know, Kane and Bryan are not winning. They're just not. Even Randy Orton, to me, seems unlikely. So let's examine the other possibilities that we have here. Mark Henry. Mark Henry absolutely can win this thing and could challenge Alberto Del Rio for the title at WrestleMania. You know, Jack Swagger, to me, based on his newfound affiliation with the man that you heard at the top of the show, Zeb Coulter, the former Dutch Mantel, based on that and the direction they seem to be going with the character, you know, hating all foreigners and hating immigrants, coming over the border, all that stuff, that would seem to telegraph a Swagger win and a feud with Del Rio for the championship at WrestleMania. I like the serious Swagger character so far, and you know what? If he wins the chamber and he fights for the title of WrestleMania, God, I mean, it's hard to argue that WWE isn't doing everything they can to finally help get this guy over. Here's a guy who won, what, one match on Raw all of last year. He lost every single week, was mocked mercilessly on commentary, and disappeared because he just had to get away. They had to get that character off TV and rehab him somehow and try to get people to forget about what a lousy year he had, and they've done that. You know, they've been able to do that so far. So I'm tempted to pick Jack Swagger here in this match, but I'm going to go in a different direction. Okay, there have been reports to suggest that Chris Jericho is going to be matched up with Ryback at WrestleMania. There's at least one news website where I saw that reported. You know, Jericho may turn heel before then to set up the match with Ryback. I don't like that idea. I don't know if that's true, but if it is, I don't like that idea. Jericho is a great heel, but right now the babyface thing is clicking. Okay, people are into him. He's been having great matches over the last couple of weeks. I wouldn't turn him. I suggested last week on the Sound Off that a good opponent for Ryback at WrestleMania would be Mark Henry. You know, I don't think they'd have a five-star match or anything like that, but it'd be a solid big man battle. You know, I wouldn't mind seeing that. That then frees up Jericho to do something else. So, here's my thought. Jericho wins the Elimination Chamber. He doesn't exactly have a sterling record in these things. I think last year he got kicked in the head by CM Punk, and he kind of fell out of the chamber and never returned. He's got a 1-6 record in 7 Elimination Chamber appearances. In his one lone win, he actually won the World Heavyweight title. He beat The Undertaker for it. If you remember, Shawn Michaels interfered. That was to set up the Michaels-Undertaker rematch at WrestleMania. Jericho fell short at the Royal Rumble this year, just like he did last year. I think he's due for a big win. And the reason being, it sets up perfectly for Dolph Ziggler to cash in his Money in the Bank briefcase at the pay-per-view, either on Del Rio or Big Show, whoever wins their match. I mean, think about it. Ziggler has no match on this show. He is not on the pay-per-view. He protested Jericho's involvement in the chamber. He wanted into the match on Monday so he could stop Jericho from winning. That was his purpose in wanting to be in the chamber. Then he lost to Kane. He's been losing quite a bit lately. I just feel like he has to be cashing in soon. I've said for a while, I would love to see Ziggler do it at WrestleMania, win the championship there. But he can win it on this show and then defend against Jericho at WrestleMania in a match that could very well steal the show. You know, just like his t-shirt says, I steal shows and girlfriends or something like that. Hey, just like the t-shirt says, right? Granted, they'll end up opening the show, but it'll still be a hell of an opener. And if they want, they can still do Swagger and Del Rio at WrestleMania, just not for the championship. I mean, to me, you know, Jack Swagger and Alberto Del Rio, it doesn't feel like a suitable world title match at WrestleMania. I don't see it. I don't buy it. I don't see it. And the last time we had a world title match at WrestleMania with racial overtones was Triple H and Booker T. And that didn't end too well. At least not for Booker, it didn't. So that's my pick for the chamber. I'm going to, you know, I'd say be bold. I don't know how bold it really is, but I'll go with Jericho with the expectation that Ziggler cashes in, wins the title, and it sets up Jericho Ziggler for WrestleMania in what I think could be a hell of a match. Speaking of the World Heavyweight title, Alberto Del Rio against Big Show. Typically, I would talk about how backwards it feels to have two last man standing matches build to a regular singles match. And it is backwards, but in this case, I actually think it kind of makes sense. You know, Big Show has pointed out on TV that Del Rio has yet to pin his shoulders to the mat or make him submit. Del Rio does have a submission hold as a finishing maneuver. You know, Big Show claims those first two losses were flukes. You know, in one, he overturned the announce desk on top of the Big Show, and in the other match, he had to duct tape his feet to the bottom rope in order to win. So now, the story is that the onus is on Del Rio to beat Big Show in decisive fashion. You know, Del Rio is the champion going into this match. In some ways, he's the underdog, I guess. That's kind of what the story is. But the onus is on the champion in this case, which is kind of weird in a way, because, again, he's beaten this man twice now. But the story they're building seems to be, well, you really haven't proven anything to me yet because you really haven't beaten me. You haven't properly beaten me yet. So, yeah, you're the champion, but it's your job to beat me on Sunday and prove that you can actually beat me like a man. That's essentially the story I get out of this whole thing. I like that story. You know, it's either pin me or make me tap out. For this feud, it actually does make sense for them to be doing it this way. And I think Del Rio will beat Big Show because they're really trying to get Del Rio over in a big way, and Big Show really has nothing left to lose at this point in his career. You know, he can lose matches like this. It doesn't really matter. He can help make new guys, and Del Rio hasn't exactly caught fire yet as the new world champion. He can use all the help he can get. Now, of course, the problem with this is I'm predicting a Ziggler cash-in, and if they take the title off Del Rio and, you know, they don't even include him in the world title mix at WrestleMania, that doesn't exactly bode well for Del Rio, so they're not doing him any good by doing that either. But that's the outcome I go with if I'm booking this show. I have Del Rio beat Big Show in decisive fashion, get that big win over him, and Ziggler cashes in, Jericho wins the chamber, and there you go. It sets up WrestleMania perfectly. Antonio Cesaro and The Miz for the United States Championship. I'm going with Cesaro. Not that I don't think they might switch the title. I hope they don't. Caitlyn and Tamina Snuka has been added for the Divas Championship. The Divas division is dead. You know, it's got no pulse. I mean, I don't even remember the last time there was a Divas match on Raw. It's been about 2 or 3 weeks at this point. But they stuck this match on the show too early to take the title off Caitlyn, I would think, so I'll go with her. And in the pre-show YouTube match, Tenzai and Brodus Clay, who are new BFFs, they'll be taking on the Rhodes Scholars, Cody Rhodes and Damian Sandow. And according to WWE.com, the way they phrase it, the Rhodes Scholars are reuniting for one night only. Now, this is about 2 weeks after breaking up. So, I don't know. You find me another team that's broken up and gotten back together that quickly. I think they may have set a new record here. Not that I'm arguing. I think it's for the better. But I just find that funny that only a couple of weeks ago on SmackDown, they were telling Booker T and Teddy Long, you know, we're going our separate ways, we're breaking up, but we're still going to be the best of friends. And here we are at the Elimination Chamber, and the Rhodes Scholars are back together. So it doesn't matter anyway. I figure Tenzai and Brodus Clay are getting the push, so they're probably winning the match. And there you go. That's the card for Sunday, Elimination Chamber on pay-per-view. Now, let's talk about Raw this past Monday night from Nashville, Tennessee. We're going to zip right through this here because we got a lot of stuff to get to. Here was the story of Raw in a nutshell. Here's the key stuff. Paul Heyman quit. Then CM Punk came out and convinced him to unquit. And before he unquit, Heyman cited the fact that he could potentially bring bad luck to CM Punk as the reason why he was leaving. So now that he's back, I presume this is somehow going to tie in with Undertaker coming back. Maybe as early as this week. I mean, if he's not at the pay-per-view, I would expect if Undertaker's wrestling, he would be on Raw this Monday night in, I think Raw's in Lafayette, Louisiana this week. So I guess we'll find out. Mark Henry beat the great Kali. It was as horrible as you might think it would be. And then Henry killed Hornswoggle with a World's Strongest Slam, and that made the entire segment worth it to me. Never gets old watching midgets get squashed. It's kind of a wrestling tradition over the years. Chris Jericho and Daniel Bryan had a freaking awesome match. Best Raw match of the year so far, hands down. I know the year is still young, but this was really good stuff. If you haven't seen it, or if you only listen to the sound off, you know, you listen to my reviews so you don't have to watch Raw, and I know a lot of you do that. People have given up on Raw. They've given up on the entire product. All they do is listen to podcasts or my show just to keep them kind of updated on what's going on. Go find this match on YouTube and watch it. It is well worth your time. Cena, Sheamus, and Ryback beat Drew McIntyre, Heath Slater, and Jinder Mahal of 3MB in a quick squash. This was old school right here. Kind of reminded me of one of those old squash matches you would see back on Superstars or Wrestling Challenge. Although back then you would never, ever, 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 ever see Hulk Hogan, Ultimate Warrior, and Macho Man, for example, as a tag team on Superstars. Hulk Hogan rarely made appearances on the syndicated shows. And supposedly, you know, we're supposed to think that Cena, Sheamus, and Ryback are the three biggest baby faces in the company, even though Cena gets booed by, 75% of the crowd. But this was fine. Just a quick exhibition for the baby faces heading into battle with the Shield. It was exactly what it should have been. I had no problem with it. When they first came out, Jerry Lawler, in reference to John Cena when he made his entrance, Lawler said the roof was literally coming off the arena. I don't think Jerry Lawler quite understands the meaning of the word literally. When I first saw that we were getting a match, for example, this week between Mark Henry and the Great Khali, I had a heart attack. Whereas Jerry Lawler literally had a heart attack. See the difference there? I can sit here and say The Miz sucks as a babyface, but he doesn't literally suck as a babyface, right? Pat Patterson, on the other hand, he literally sucked as a babyface. It's all a matter of context. Zack Ryder met his match this week in the form of Ankle Sam, or the Patriot Act, as Jack Swagger calls it. Swagger was accompanied to the ring, totally at random, by Dutch Mantel. And only they're not calling him Dutch Mantel, they're calling him Zeb Coulter, which is a play off the Uncle Zebekiah name he used in WWE back when he used to manage the Harris Twins when they were the Blue Brothers. He also managed Justin Hawk Bradshaw, little trivia fact there. He managed JBL, how about that? He also helped out guys like Steve Austin, Undertaker, Kane. I know Mantel has a book that came out a few years ago, and he had a blog that he used to maintain, and he used to post excerpts from the book, and he shared stories about coming up, or helping to bring up guys like Kane and Undertaker in the business. Very, fascinating stuff, and definitely a legendary figure. He's had a hand in a lot of careers like that. Of course, his time in TNA. I've remarked many times about the Kurt Angle Samoa Joe cage match from Lockdown 5-6 years ago, however long it was. They kind of went a different way booking that match. It was almost MMA style, for lack of a better term, a much more serious, focused build. And to date, that was the biggest pay-per-view buy rate TNA has ever done. Did something like 60,000 buys for that pay-per-view. And supposedly the build-up to that match was the brainchild of Dutch Mantel. And when the pay-per-view was over, as good as the pay-per-view did, they decided that just wasn't something they wanted to do, and they went in a different direction. Wouldn't shock me if that was Vince Russo's call, but Yeah, Mantell left. Mantell was fired, if I remember correctly, from TNA because it was there was fallout from a power struggle that was going on. Jeff Jarrett, the whole thing where he got together with Kurt Angle's ex-wife, and there was a lot of drama going on, and Dixie Carter was pissed off at Jeff Jarrett because he lied to Dixie and said that, you know, he wasn't together with Karen when he really was. Anyway, you know, Mantell was very good friends with Jarrett, probably had his job there largely because of Jeff Jarrett, so when Jarrett lost power, Mantell pretty much got shit-canned. So that was kind of the end of him in TNA. So now he's back. He is Zeb Coulter. The name is also a playoff of Ann Coulter, or as I call her, Coultergeist. She's a batshit crazy woman who often pops up on Fox News hawking her latest book. And Zeb's gimmick is that he is anti-immigrant, really anti-anybody who doesn't look the same way he does. Did you see that mustache he was rocking on the show? I don't know too many people who look like Zeb, regardless of what color their skin may be. This segment here, yeah, I played some of the audio at the beginning of the show, some of the more salacious audio. This didn't offend me, but it did shock me. Only because I never expected to see a gimmick like this again, you know, not in 2013, modern day, PG, WWE. I would have totally expected something like this in WWF back in the 90s or the 80s or even the NWA or, you know, pick your regional territory back in the 70s or the 80s. My God, I mean, all the different gimmicks they had with the Russians and, I mean, even some of the way some of the African-American superstars were treated back in the day. God knows they've done angles like that before where I mentioned Triple H and Booker T earlier. There were even racial overtones to their storyline when they headed into WrestleMania 19 back in 03. I mean, we've seen examples of this over time so many times in wrestling. But when you look back in history, this is tame compared to some of the stuff they've done before. And, I mean, this is just one promo, so who the hell knows? I mean, maybe this guy comes back out on television this week and really says something and steps over the line, or maybe they just decide to drop the character. Wouldn't shock me. I don't know how long they're going to keep him around for. Maybe they change their minds in a week and they say, you know what? We don't want to go in this direction. So it's still very early, but again, this is very tame stuff compared to what they've done before. I mean, for God's sakes, Akeem the African Dream, Slick eating fried chicken out of a bucket. But still, I mean, you have to be careful doing a racial gimmick like this, because let's face it, I mean, you've got some crazy-ass wrestling fans out there who might just buy into what this guy is saying. You know, this is different than, say, the U.S. versus Canada angle from 1997, which turned the fans against each other. I mean, you had people from the U.S., you had people from Canada. I mean, the fans were fighting. I mean, they did a very good job of kind of turning the fans against each other. They made a lot of money off of it. The difference, though, is that was a matter of national pride. That was not a matter of race. It wasn't, you know, I'm black and you're white, I'm good and you're bad. It was more, you know, nationalism than racism or anything like that. So, anyway, I assume this is all just to set up a feud with Alberto Del Rio, possibly for the world title, although I would not go in that direction. But I guess we will see. They showed clips of Brock Lesnar killing The Miz from the week before. I think this should be replayed on every single Raw for the rest of 2013 and added to the signature at the beginning of the show as well. Cesaro then, on this show, attacked Miz after his match against Cody Rhodes, and he used his giant swing on Miz outside the ring. He was flinging The Miz repeatedly into the barricade over and over, back and forth, back and forth. I almost cried watching this. This was so great. I now demand that a replay of Cesaro swinging Miz around be part of the Raw show for the rest of the year as well. You can just air it right after the Lesnar segment every single week, and I would be totally fine with that. The Shield did a long promo in the ring. Cena, Sheamus, and Ryback ambushed them, chased them into the crowd. There was a shot here of Sheamus who, you know, babyface Sheamus is kind of crazy. If you look at him, he's got this crazed look in his eyes. He's always smiling. His eyeballs look like they're about to bulge out of his skull. He kind of freaks me out a little bit. But the visual of a smiling Sheamus patting Ryback on the head like a dog and putting him in a friendly headlock, I just thought that was great. I have no idea why, but I like that. Del Rio beat Damian Sandow with the armbar in about a minute. Why did they break up the Road Scholars again? Can someone answer that for me? Hopefully the fact that they're already back together for the pay-per-view is a sign they've come to their senses. I think Cody Rhodes could be very successful as a single star. I think he will be. But if you don't have plans for these guys, then don't fucking break them up. You had a good thing with these two guys. So hopefully they'll keep them together for a little while longer. Kane beat Dolph Ziggler to get the final spot in the Chamber match. I talked about this a little bit earlier. Ziggler has to be cashing in. Otherwise, these people have just lost their minds. Final segment was The Rock. He was out there cutting a completely pointless promo about buying a car from some crackhead at a bar in Nashville when he was 15 years old. Why Rock was in the bar at 15 years of age, don't ask. I guess things in Nashville are a little bit different. I guess in the promo he said he looked a lot older than he was, but still, that kind of made me go, huh? That didn't really make a lot of sense. Somewhere in here he name-dropped Jeff Jarrett, speaking of which. He is friendly with Jarrett, so that's kind of where that came from. I guarantee you The Rock is the only person who could get away with doing that. Nobody else is going to be out there name-dropping Jeff Jarrett, mark my words. But The Rock, I guess, can get away with it. Punk and Heyman, they eventually came out. They brawled. Rock went for the people's elbow on Punk. Heyman grabbed Rock's leg. Punk delivered the GTS. He then stole the WWE title, and he left with it. John Cena cut a completely pointless rambling promo on the go-home show before the Rumble last month that had absolutely nothing at all to do with the pay-per-view, and that's basically what The Rock did here. So, in that respect, this was an epic fail. I cannot see how anybody who was not already ordering the pay-per-view would look at this and go, wow, I gotta, you know, spend $45 on the Elimination Chamber. Now, you know, I think most people probably already had their minds made up. I think Rock vs. Punk is still a big enough match where I think the Chamber show will do pretty good this weekend, but still. This is the final show that most people are going to watch 6 days before the pay-per-view, and Rock is out there talking about crackheads in Nashville. I don't know what this was, to be perfectly honest with you. This was Rock going out there and saying whatever the hell he wanted to say, because he's The Rock, and he can get away with it. And you know what? Sometimes that's not always a good thing. So that was Raw. I'd like to amend my prediction for the pay-per-view and call it right now. Run in by the crackhead on Sunday to cost Rock the championship. You heard it here first. That's my prediction. Tammy Sitch was back in the news this week, making history, no less. She has become the first person to be publicly cut off from any further WWE-sponsored rehab. The company released a statement this week that reads as follows, quote, as part of the former talent rehabilitation program, WWE has sent Ms. Sitch to rehab numerous times with all costs covered by WWE. Unfortunately, Ms. Sitch has continued to make poor personal choices and is ultimately responsible for the consequences of these decisions. WWE has always provided rehab at a certified treatment center. However, given Ms. Sitch's inability to change her lifestyle and successfully complete treatment, WWE will no longer fund her rehabilitation. So there you go. I'm sure this comes in direct response to a shoot interview that Sitch did with Sean Oliver of Kayfabe Commentaries. The interview was actually done months ago, I think in between rehab stints for Sonny. She had already been in trouble a couple of times and got busted or whatever, did the interview, and then I think she got into more trouble. So I think that's kind of the timeline here. But the trailer for the DVD only first popped up online this week. And in the 4.5-minute clip that was released, she talks about WWE not being happy that her name was in the news for being arrested. Remember, when she was getting arrested literally every single week for like 5 or 6 weeks straight, I mean, it was ludicrous. She would violate the restraining order that her boyfriend had against her. She abused him. She claimed he abused her. But then when they checked her out at the hospital, they found no visible signs of injury. Just one shitstorm after another with this woman. And this all came in the midst of Linda McMahon's run for the Senate in the state of Connecticut. Well, I'd imagine WWE probably wasn't very happy on, you know, the news in Connecticut every single day when they had stories about this former employee of theirs being arrested for this and that. You know, that's not a good thing. So she claims that WWE had placed her originally in a treatment facility at the cost of something like $1,000 a day, and probably saved her ass from going to jail at one point by sending her to rehab. So anyway, once Linda lost the race, Sonny claims, they had her transferred to a different rehab facility that only cost the company a mere $106 a day. Not only that, but the conditions, she says, were horrific. She was forced to wash dishes for 17 hours straight every day, all while standing up. She wasn't allowed to sit down. She claims she was assaulted by another patient. complained to WWE and wanted to be put into a much better facility, and they allegedly refused. That's her story. They said no. She claims she brought up the fact that, well, Scott Hall has been to rehab a whole bunch of times. You know, he's been in and out of rehab about a gazillion times, give or take. And how it was always the best facility. And WWE's response, again, allegedly, was to say, well, you're not Scott Hall. Now, to be fair, few people are. Okay, how that man even has a functioning liver is a miracle of science. I keep stressing the word allegedly because in this same video clip, this woman openly admits to making up stories in other shoot interviews that she's done just to amuse herself. So, you know, just on the spot, out of the clear blue sky, she'll make shit up. That right there calls into question everything the woman says. She has no credibility. She has zero credibility. You know, maybe she really did have to wash dishes standing up for 17 hours and she lived under deplorable conditions. Somebody online watched the entire interview from start to finish and says that in the actual full shoot interview with Sean Oliver, she admits the dishwashing stuff was reserved for people who committed serious infractions. He doesn't say whether or not she addresses what it is that she did that got her into trouble in the first place. I'm sure she didn't do anything wrong. You know, she's the perfect little angel. The same person who watched the full interview also says that what happened is that Tammy got kicked out of the Nice Rehab Center in Reading, Pennsylvania for, quote, poor conduct, and was then sent to a state-run mental health facility in Harrisburg, Pennsylvania. That's the place that she claims only cost $106 a day. So again, was it her own bad behavior or was it WWE's fault? You can't believe a word the woman says. She's a pathological liar. If she got kicked out for poor conduct, I'm not even sure it's WWE making the decision at that point to move her out to somewhere else. You know, maybe somebody who's worked at a rehab facility listening to this can email me and let me know how that all works with, you know, the legalities and everything. The thing that gets me about that clip is the sense of entitlement. As though WWE is obligated, you know, to place her in the best facility that money can buy. She's lucky she didn't end up in a jail cell last October, right next to that crackhead who sold Rock his first car. WWE isn't obligated to pay for anybody's rehab. They don't have to do it. They do it for public relations. Vince McMahon said so himself in front of Congress. Those were his exact words. It's not the most endearing reason, but hey, you know, at least they're offering help to people, whatever their motives are. And former WWE superstar Tammy Sitch getting busted on the news every day is bad public relations. I mean, this woman's already been to rehab, paid for by them, multiple times. But because Scott Hall keeps getting chances, she feels she's entitled to the same thing. I'm sure Scott Hall does get preferential treatment. Because he's buddies with the future owner, just like Sean Waltman probably does. He's been in and out of rehab a couple of times. But that's not the point. I'm sure that she probably can't afford to foot the bill for her own treatment. She should be thanking them for their help, like Matt Hardy did, or better yet, just keep your mouth shut and don't say anything. Speaking of Scott Hall and his liver, DDP posted a video on his YouTube channel of he and Jake the Snake Roberts on a speakerphone phone call with Scott Hall. DDP said he got a message from Sean Waltman saying that he talked to Scott. Things didn't sound too good. They were looking bad. So they called him, and they played this clip. It's on YouTube. I posted it on Twitter. Hall just sounded gone, like the lights are out, but nobody's home. And he just talked about how he's been drinking vodka for breakfast. Nothing but vodka. Just the thought of drinking vodka straight makes me want to puke. How far off must this guy be where he's drinking vodka as a meal in the morning? The video was actually really kind of gut-wrenching. It ends with DDP and Jake convincing Hall to make the trip to Atlanta to stay with them in what DDP calls the accountability crib. Jake the Snake's transformation over the last 2 or 3 months has just been amazing to witness, for those of you who have been following it online. You look at the before and after photos of what Jake used to look like and watch him on video. Just his own attitude, the foul language, everything back then, and then look at him now. DDP deserves a lot of credit, is all I have to say. He's, you know, a shaman. He's like a miracle man for being able to pull that off. because the two guys that I would have written off would be Jake and Scott. And Jake legit seems to have turned his life around. Now, that doesn't mean he won't slip up, but he's been sober for over 60 days now. And you watch him in this video with DDP, you know, he's trying to convince Scott Hall to join him in Atlanta and realize that, you know, that was probably Jake on the other end of that line 3 months ago, trying to be convinced to come and stay with DDP. And look at him now. I mean, it's a great thing to see, and I really hope that Scott Hall can turn things around. You know, Jake said on his Twitter that Hall is now almost 3 weeks sober, and he's supposed to be moving into their so-called crib shortly, which means, by the way, Jake Roberts and Scott Hall living in a house together. If that doesn't have reality show written all over it, I don't know what does. That just sounds like a really bad idea, but hopefully I'm wrong. If anything, I'd worry about Scott Hall being a detriment to whatever progress Jake has made. I'd be worried about Jake more than I'd be worried about Scott Hall. I mean, it's all about having positive influences around you, and right now, Scott Hall is in a real bad place. You know, I really hope this works out for him, but his problems are worse than Jake's. Hall's been abusing his body for so long. He's got heart problems now. The guy's got a pacemaker installed, for crying out loud. Hall's best friend, meanwhile, Kevin Nash, took to Twitter on Thursday night, early Friday morning, I guess it would have been, which is always a bad thing for him to do. Nash has been known to, shall we say, imbibe a little too heavily and go off on these late-night Twitter tirades that he ends up deleting the next morning. Nash's vice is wine. Nash is not a drug guy, not a beer guy. His big thing is wine. He loves his wine. And he spoke about the news that DDP was bringing Scott into their crib down in Atlanta. I feel like an idiot for saying crib. Into their house, let's say. And he wasn't as positive as you might think. Nobody has tried to help Scott Hall as much as Kevin Nash. Say what you want to about Nash, but he has done everything a friend could possibly do to try to help another friend, and then some. And he's talked about this. He's been very open about this. About all the things he's tried to do to help his buddy out. So if anybody knows the depths of Scott Hall's problems, it's Nash. And he doesn't seem to think that this is going to end well. At least he didn't as of a couple of days ago. I mean, when Impact ended on Thursday night, I passed out much earlier than I usually do. And so naturally, I went to bed early, and so therefore I woke up much earlier than I usually do, because God forbid I should get more than 5 hours sleep a night. So I woke up at 4:30 in the morning, and I decided to check Twitter, and Kevin Nash happened to be in the middle of posting all these messages, and so I saved some of them, because I had a feeling that he might regret posting them later on and they might disappear. And sure enough, I was right. Some of the messages he deleted. Some of the things that Nash tweeted were that, quote, Jake was clean when he got to Dallas. Scott will die during the detox stage. That's real world, not bullshit, end quote. Another person said to Nash, but hey, it's a start. You know, I'm sure Dallas has people to help with the detox process, to which Nash responded, no, they don't. Dallas and I already had this conversation. And Nash went on to say, does anyone realize Scott Hall will die if not taken to a hospital and clinically detoxed? Did Scott know he was on that call live? That's fucked up. I would never have my friend saying over and over that he lives on vodka, end quote. Now, he raises some valid points. You know, DDP is not a doctor. Do they have people at the house who can help Hall if he has issues during detox? You know, did Hall know that that phone call would be broadcast to the world on YouTube? Did DDP ask him for his permission to post it? If not, then I agree with Nash. That's kind of fucked up. I don't think DDP meant any ill will, but I can understand why Nash would be so upset. Now, by Saturday morning, by this morning, actually, as I record this, Nash seemed to change his tune. He did like a 180. He said he spoke with Scott for over an hour on the phone. Scott Hall sounded the best that he has in 15 years. Apparently on Thursday, I assume he means this upcoming week and not this past week. On Thursday, this upcoming week, Scott Hall is headed for detox. And from there, he then moves in with DDP. So I guess the plan was that Hall was going to move in this Monday. I wonder now if that means it's been pushed back, if he's going to go to detox in a hospital on Thursday, however long that takes, and then whenever he's done there, then he'll move in with them. But that's the plan. And Nash said that he has since spoken with Diamond Dallas Page. He feels they are now on the same page, no pun intended. So whatever issues they had seem to have been smoothed over. And I for one, am very intrigued to see if Scott Hall actually does go to the House. And it's one thing to say that you're going to do it, but for him to actually do it would be a big step. And I hope he makes it. You know, I hope he goes. I think it's worth a shot. The guy is a dead man if he doesn't. They've tried everything. They have thrown everything at the wall with this man to see if it works, and it has not worked. So what's left to lose? Life. And I don't think anybody wants to see that. Other news here. El Generico debuted at an NXT house show on Wednesday night in Orlando in Brodus Clay's corner for Brodus's match against Conor O'Brien. He was wearing his signature mask and cape. They did not identify him as El Generico. I see a lot of people saying, oh, they're going to let him keep his name. I'm of the impression they didn't announce him as El Generico. So he could very well still end up with a different name. In fact, I still expect him to end up with a different name. But it was interesting he had the cape and he had the mask. For one night at least, you know, he got to keep the gimmick. So perhaps there's hope on that front. And an interesting little nugget also from this week's Wrestling Observer newsletter. This goes out to all the people still emailing me every single week asking about a John Cena heel turn. With John Cena off of last weekend's Raw house shows, business was way down. In fact, the SmackDown house shows in Missouri outdrew the Raw house shows, which almost never happens. The Raw shows were in Missouri. The three Raw shows, the attendance was 4,000, 4,800, and 3,200, respectively. The biggest gate, $135,000. I'm into these numbers and stats. I know this bores some people, but just bear with me here. So that's what the Raw shows did. The SmackDown show in Illinois, there were two shows. I'm sorry, there were two shows, one in Illinois, which did 5,500 people. The other show that SmackDown had 7,500 people in Louisville, Kentucky, with the highest gate for the SmackDown show clocking in at $220,000. So, 220 to 135. And those attendance numbers say it all right there. You know, say what you want about John Cena, but the numbers don't lie. So, all the people who still email me, is John Cena going to turn heel? When is he going to turn heel? Don't you think he should turn heel? Yeah, I think it would be entertaining to see John Cena try to be a heel after all these years. I don't know if he still could be. I think, you know, I guess he could. It's been so long. But it ain't happening, people. So just stop asking because it's just not going to happen. Let's talk about TNA here. I caught Impact Wrestling on Thursday night. They went from Manchester last week to London this week. Another raucous crowd. It's funny because the way these shows are shot without the fancy set and everything, it comes off almost looking like a house show. But it still looks light years ahead of the Impact Zone. Not that the Impact Zone was bad, but it didn't come off as Major League, whereas these shows, it actually kind of does come off as Major League. Show was built around four matches that Hulk Hogan announced at the beginning of the show. He said the matches would determine the number one contender to Jeff Hardy's title at Lockdown. It was James Storm against RVD, Daniels against Magnus, Samoa Joe against Kurt Angle, and Austin Aries against Bobby Roode. Yes, the new World Tag Team Champions forced to wrestle one another. That hardly seems fair. Hogan also announced that it would be Team TNA against Aces and Eights in a Lethal Lockdown match at the pay-per-view, and he introduced the captain of Team TNA, the greatest wrestler of all time, Sting. Those were Hogan's exact words. His nose grew about 8 inches when he said that. You can hang a coat on it. That's how long his nose was. Magnus beat Daniels in a match where Magnus looked like a total star. I don't know if he'll come off the same way once they're back here stateside, but in his home country, in front of those people, they treated him like a superstar, and he won clean with an elbow off the top. There was a segment backstage with Bully Ray and Brooke Hogan. Bully was dejected. He suffered some undisclosed leg injury. I believe it was a tear in his quad. I've heard it was a legit injury. I've heard it's just for storyline. I mean, clearly they're weaving this into the storyline, so I don't know how real this injury really is. It might be a tear in his quad. That's bad news if it is. Hopefully it's not a big tear. But supposedly he suffered that injury during the tables match on TV last week. You know, a few weeks ago I said that Brooke was looking pretty good. There was one episode of Impact. Maybe it was what she was wearing. I don't know. I thought she looked pretty good, actually, on that show. And on this show, all I kept thinking was, why is Fabio dressed like Brooke Hogan? Joe and Angle wrestled to a no contest after Wes Briscoe and Garrett Bischoff ran in to attack them both. They quickly fought them off, and the Job Squad retreated back into the crowd. So, pretty good little match here. No, I mean, nothing like their past battles, but still pretty good. Gail Kim, Tara, and Jesse beat Party Marty and the Blossom Twins from TNA's British Boot Camp TV show. It was a mixed tag team match. I don't know how much experience these Blossom Twins have, but they're already better than most of the WWE divas. Not really sure what that says, but they are. Party Marty is lucky to be alive after he... This was something else here. Jesse is outside the ring. And Party Marty here, who must have been partying a little too much the night before, decides he's going to go for a dive through the ropes. And there's a reason they call these things sometimes a suicide dive. Okay? That was apropos, I think, in this case. He launched himself through the ropes. I mean, he overshot Jesse and quite literally spiked himself headfirst into the steel barricade. It looked like he absolutely killed himself. They showed about 5 replays of it, which hopefully is a sign that he's okay. I would hope that if he actually did break his friggin' neck, something worse, they wouldn't show it over and over and over again. But then again, I guess they kind of did do the same thing with Jesse Sorensen, who actually was really badly injured and actually has never come back. So I guess that doesn't really mean much. But anyway, I believe he's okay. It looked really bad. And by the way, when I heard Party Marty was wrestling on Impact, I was very disappointed to find out that it was not, in fact, Marty Jannetty. Now, that guy knows how to party. Backstage, Aries and Rude argued over who was going to win which title. They both talked about the other person, quote, taking one for the team in their match tonight in the main event. Aries told Rude that after he wins the world title, Bobby Rude can go for the TV title and the Knockouts title. I thought that was hilarious. James Storm beat RVD with the super kick, and that's pretty much all there is to it. Elsewhere, we had Joseph Park. Joseph Park was backstage for my favorite segment of the night. Nothing new there. He knocked on the door to Hulk Hogan's office and interrupted a conversation he was having with his daughter. I'm a little perturbed at the idea of Hulk Hogan and Brooke being behind closed doors after some of the things I've seen recently, but we'll pretend they were having a normal conversation. At least I hope they were. Joe Park said that he was talking to the boys, and they told him he needed to go to Hulk to politic for the shot against Jeff Hardy. He wanted to fight Jeff Hardy for the championship. Why he thinks he deserves a title shot after wrestling one match on TV and beating Robbie E, I have no idea. I'll just chalk it up to Joe's inexperience in the business. He's very naive. Anyway, he said he was told to politic for it. He had already made up campaign posters and buttons. Hogan didn't think Joe had a good grasp on exactly what wrestling politics were. And my God, if anybody would know about that, it's the Hulkster. Joe Park came to the right place here. So Hogan asked Joe if he knew what a rib was. He said, no, not a barbecue rib, a rib. And, of course, Park did not know what that meant, and Hulk told him to go ask the boys. And Joe Park said he would do that, but first he just wanted to make sure he had Hulk's vote. And Hulk said, sure, you've got my vote, Joseph. And with that, Park left. He was pretty excited, too, and he left. Joe Park may end up winning Best Wrestling Character in the Sound Off Year-End Awards 2 years in a row at this rate. Just fantastically gullible, as always. I love it. Meanwhile, Brooke was doing some politicking of her own, lobbying her dad to consider her husband, Bully Ray, for a world title shot. More nepotism in wrestling. Can't believe it. I've never heard of such a thing. Hulk said he would consider it, which seems rather unfair to me, given that, you know, you've got 8 other men wrestling in matches throughout the entire show to determine the number one contender. If I were one of those 8 guys, I'd be pretty pissed off at that comment. Main event had Bobby Roode and Austin Aries wrestling to a double countout after Chavo and Hernandez came out for the distraction, and Aries and Roode kind of went after them, and then they realized they were being counted out, and they both fought one another, and by the time they got back to the ring, it was too late. And that description really doesn't do this match justice. It was actually entertaining as hell, this match. When it started, both guys attempted to do the finger poke of doom, figuring that the other guy would lay down, but neither man did, which just resulted in an argument where they both told one another, you're supposed to go down! So they ended up having a competitive match, and if you saw any of their matches last year, these two work real well together. They also did the Eddie Guerrero spot where, with the referee down, Rude grabbed a chair, he hit the mat with it, lay down to make it look like Aries hit him. The problem is the referee was still recovering. He had not yet turned around. And so Aries just did the same thing. He hit the mat. He laid down. And when Brian Hebner turned around, all he saw were both guys laying on the mat and a chair between them. So this was really fun stuff. I enjoyed it. And it's funny, too, because when Hernandez and Chavo came out at the end, they got booed. Because I think people were having so much fun watching Rude and Aries. And they're so easy to cheer for, even though they're these two, you know, sniveling heels. Nobody cared for Chavo and Hernandez, the baby faces, when they came out. So I thought that was kind of amusing. The show ended with Hulk Hogan coming out to announce the new number one contender when Aces and Eights descended upon the ring. They surrounded the Hulkster. Bully Ray limped out on a bum leg. He had a chain. He kept all eight men at bay with a chain by himself until Sting came out with a bunch of bats for them to use. So just when you thought TNA could not do a better job of making Aces and Eights look totally and completely inept, they somehow managed to top themselves this week. And we never did find out who Jeff Hardy's opponent will be, I presume, because in the end it's, you know, going to be Bully Ray. And at the pay-per-view, Hulk Hogan is likely going to end up regretting that decision. Speaking of regrettable decisions, that brings me to another big story this week that I can't ignore. And that is, you've heard by now, wrestling dropped from the Olympics starting in 2020. Everybody's all up in arms. Everybody's freaking out. It's crazy. Everybody can't believe that the International Olympic Committee would make such a ridiculously heinous decision. And so now there are 9 sports, which now include wrestling, that will have to apply this fall. There is apparently a single opening left for the games in 2020. There is still a chance that wrestling could get back in there, but they're going to have to compete against, I guess, 8 other sports. And those other sports include baseball, softball, karate, or as Cosmo Kramer might say, karate, squash, roller sports, sport climbing, wakeboarding, and wushu, which is apparently a popular martial art in China. So again, wrestling still has a fighting chance to make its way back into the games. Kurt Angle, furious, as you might imagine. Of course, there go his chances of winning his second gold medal at 52 years of age. Of course he's upset. He told FoxSports.com, "We're going to fight this. They can't just drop it. They're keeping badminton in that sport where you jump on a trampoline, and they're dropping wrestling. It's just crazy. I don't know what this world is coming to. Things are changing." I laughed so hard at that quote when I read it. That sport where you jump on a trampoline. Awesome. He also was on Bellator MMA after Impact on Thursday night, I guess making his case for why wrestling should be added back to the Olympics. But as I said earlier, I passed out early that night, so I missed the whole thing. I was so hoping he would mention the trampoline again. Maybe he did. If anybody saw it, let me know. Here's my take. I don't want to spend too much time on this because, quite frankly, I don't care. When I heard the news, I thought it was bullshit, you know, just like everybody else. Wrestling is one of the oldest Olympic sports. It's all I've heard repeated all week long. Wrestling is one of the oldest Olympic sports. And I looked it up. I mean, it may actually be the oldest sport besides running. You know, it was first introduced in 708 BC. That's before Christ. Lots of amateur wrestlers have gone on to successful careers in pro wrestling. You know, Kurt Angle and Brock Lesnar leap to mind. A lot of guys you may not even associate with amateur wrestling. Dolph Ziggler, you know, he wrestled at Kent State in his younger days. Shelton Benjamin. I'm not going to go through the whole list because it's pretty damn long, but you get the picture. So you can understand why everybody is so upset. Me? I think it's BS. I think there are politics involved, as there are with anything. But I'm not going to pretend that I care much beyond that. I mean, I've made my thoughts very clear on the Olympics before. I find them largely to be boring. I just do. I can't get into it. But still, baseball and softball got dropped from the Olympics in 2005. Golf was approved as an Olympic sport over karate and softball. Golf. 2016 will be the first time golf has been played at the Olympics since 1904. I've played golf before, okay? It's not my game, but I can see why it would be for other people. But have you ever tried watching golf on TV? I mean, For Christ's sake, and they voted golf in over karate. Ping pong has been part of the Olympics since 1988. By definition of what a sport is, I looked it up. A sport is defined as an activity involving physical exertion and skill in which an individual or team competes against another or others. By that definition, all of those things qualify. And by the way, by that same definition, so does professional wrestling. I'm just saying. You know, the outcomes are predetermined, so you're not really competing, but based on your performance, you're competing for a certain position on the roster, right? It's just something to think about. Anyway, my point is, if there's room for golf and ping pong, there's room for wrestling. And if there isn't, then by definition, I say professional wrestling should be considered for inclusion in the 2020 games, because if it's ratings that they're so worried about, pro wrestling is your best bet. The only problem with that, I guess, is the Olympic drug testing is some of the strongest in the entire world. I can see that being an issue for pro wrestling. All right, time for the shout-outs and questions that you have submitted to me over the past week. TheSolemnMonster@gmail.com is the email address for all that good stuff. We're going to start with Steve from New York City, here in my backyard. I was wondering if I can get a shout-out for my girlfriend, Abby. I almost said ABBA. God, I'm not even a fan of ABBA. Abby, who will be heading to a bar to watch her first pay-per-view this Sunday with me. She always puts up with my wrestling talk without complaint. And for someone who doesn't like wrestling, it's pretty impressive. Abby is better than most women when it comes to that sort of thing, let me tell you. With Tenzai turning face and teaming with Brodus, I was wondering what you think their team name should be, since you so aptly named Kane and Daniel Bryan Hell No before it ever became official on TV. Well, I'm sure they'll just put the word team in front of whatever name they come up with, but I don't know. I was thinking about this. The Funky Bunch popped up into my head first. Little nod there to Marky Mark. But if not the Funky Bunch, how about this? Are you ready for this? This is great. How about You're Funked? Is that not PG enough? I like that. You're Funked. I like that name. Mike is a listener since the second episode of The Sound Off. Also gave us our very first iTunes review. Well, remember, if you write a review for the show in iTunes, you automatically get a shout-out on the show. So you just got to make sure you email me to let me know about it. But anyway, Mike says, my best friend William's grandmother recently had a stroke, and I know for a fact every week he has been in the rehab hospital, and whenever his grandmother fell asleep, he would listen to your show to pass the time and feel better. I would love a shout-out for him and his grandmother, Virginia, who I am pleased to say is now back at home making a speedy recovery. That is awesome news. So all of my best to Virginia. I hope she's back at 100% or close to 100% very soon. And William, if that is true, and I assume it is, I hope this show made things a little bit easier for you in some small way. Mike's question is, on Raw, if Dolph Ziggler were to beat Kane, this goes back to Monday night here, if Dolph Ziggler were to beat Kane, he would have been entered into the Chamber match. So why didn't Big E Langston hit Ziggler a la the finger poke of doom? Wouldn't Kane be disqualified, and wouldn't that give Ziggler even more heat? Does WWE think the fans are too stupid and wouldn't understand Big E attacking Ziggler? Has anything like that ever been done in wrestling? Absolutely. It's been done plenty of times in wrestling, in WWE and outside of WWE. As far as why Big E didn't just attack Dolph, I don't know. Maybe they figured Vicky would have just overturned the decision or something, or put yourself in Dolph's shoes, put yourself in the character's shoes. Maybe he doesn't want the help because he doesn't think he needs it. Right? He's a cocky guy. He's an arrogant SOB. He figures he could beat Kane, no sweat. Only reason he lost was because AJ distracted him. It was a fluke. Otherwise, he would have won. He didn't know that was going to happen. Alan from Pennsylvania, been a fan of yours for only a few months, but I wish I knew about you years ago. Really enjoy your podcast every week. I want to get your thoughts on Daniel Bryan using the flying headbutt. If you don't remember, Chris Benoit used that move a lot. I always thought WWE wanted to dissociate themselves from Benoit because of what he did. Now, you can say the WWE universe might not even remember him or even know who he is, but when somebody uses the knife-edge chop, people always chant, woo! So it begs the question, why let Bryan use it? Benoit used the knife-edge chops quite a bit also. I don't think WWE would try banning those. But, you're right. The diving headbutt was always a staple of Chris Benoit's. And, when Daniel Bryan started using it, it made me think of Benoit. But when he does it now, I don't think of Chris Benoit. I think of Daniel Bryan. I think their hope If I had to take a guess, either they don't realize, number one, but number two, their hope is probably that when it comes to moves like the headbutt and the crossface, over time, as other people use those moves, and as more time goes on and we get further and further away from the, you know, the Benoit era, so to speak, that people won't associate those moves with Benoit anymore. You know, Brian has taken the move and made it his own. It's not like when Chavo does the Three Amigos suplexes and everyone still chants Eddie. I don't hear people chanting Benoit when Brian does the headbutt, and frankly, if they were to do that, believe me, they would not let him use it anymore. Kenneth writes in, everyone wants a new title belt, everyone wants Jim Ross to come back, and everyone wants John Cena to turn heel. I want the little things. I'd love if the countout rule moved from 10 to 20. If every multi-man match moved to elimination style, to have wrestling moves actually be called by the announcers, get rid of the Florida commercial spot on TV. What are the little things that you would change? I would narrow the aisles so the fans are closer to the wrestlers as they come to the ring, just like it used to be. I would bring back pay-per-view reports and event center updates on Raw and SmackDown. Raw is 3 hours now. You cannot tell me they do not have time to devote to a 3 or 4 minute event center segment somewhere with Josh Matthews or whoever, or Scott Stanford, running down the latest matches for the pay-per-view with some inset promos from some of the guys on the show. Or, let's take you back to last week and show you this heinous thing that took... You know, I don't see why they can't do that. And to me, if they did, it makes the pay-per-views feel like a much bigger deal. You know, for backstage interviews, I'd like to see a static camera that does not move. You can tell when you watch Raw or you watch SmackDown and they do a backstage interview and Matt Stryker is interviewing somebody or Josh Matthews is interviewing somebody. It's a camera guy. It's just a camera guy standing there. He's kind of moving back and forth. Back in the day, it was a static camera. It did not move. It was stationary. And the wrestlers would be standing next to the announcer, let's say Mean Gene or whoever, Sean Mooney, and would do their interview, and the wrestlers would look directly into the camera. Because we are their audience. Are they not speaking to us, right? We're the people they're talking to. They should be looking at us. Why Randy Orton, for example, when he's backstage doing a promo, is just staring at Josh Matthews. His concentration never breaks. He just stares at him. He's not the only one who does this. I'm just naming Randy Orton. Why? You're talking to us. Look at me. You're cutting the promo. You're talking to me, not to him. So, again, you said little things. These are little things. These are not important things. There's much more important things to worry about. But those are some of the little things I would change. And I say a lot of little things can make a very big difference. So, there you go. LT writes in, member of the Fantastic Four. I've been a listener to your fantastic podcast since episode 20. While many people fantasy book for WWE and TNA, and it can get very annoying, when you do it, it seems incredibly insightful and compelling. I cannot count how many times in recent years you've done some fantasy booking on your show, and either it happened just as you predicted because it's just smart booking, or you offered your take on a storyline and I had found it miles above what we actually got on TV. My question is this. If Batista were to return to WWE within the next 2 years, and Brock Lesnar is still under contract, assuming they booked a feud between the two of them, how would you book it? I am not a fan of questions like this because I get so many of them, but I'll bite on this one. You could go two ways with this. I gave this some thought here because I thought this was kind of intriguing. If Batista agrees to return, let's say, 6 to 9 months, sometime in the next 6 to 9 months, I would have Lesnar beat Triple H at WrestleMania, as unlikely as that may be, him beating Triple H 2 times in a row. Have him beat Triple H, then transition into a program with Randy Orton, assuming that he doesn't go heel before then. And Brock could get the better of Orton as well. I think that they would probably really like working together because they came up together in OVW. So you do that. At some point shortly thereafter, you do an angle on Raw where Lesnar kills Ric Flair. When who should come out to his rescue but Big Dave? And having gone through all the former members of Evolution except one, it sets up a Lesnar-Batista match, I think, quite nicely. Now, the other route you could go, if we're talking a year or two down the road, and Batista is not getting any younger. He's already in his mid to late 40s. So I would advise against waiting too long if he is going to come back. The other route is the polar opposite of what I just suggested, with Batista coming back as the heel and Brock Lesnar as the babyface monster. Now, personally, I prefer the first idea to the second one. Now, they call this fantasy booking for a reason. Reality and fantasy, they don't play well together. Brock has a very special contract that calls for a ridiculously limited number of appearances each year. Could they pull this off? Yeah, I think they can. But Brock is not going to be on television every week, or even every other week. But if he wins at WrestleMania, you know, you take some time off, then set up the SummerSlam match with Orton, then another month or two after, he does the angle with Flair, and that's when Batista comes back, and you could build to something at Survivor Series. So yeah, I think that's possible. I like that idea. Chuck from Big Rock, Illinois. My question is about a commercial I saw during Monday Night Raw. They advertised their new DVD about WCW Monday Nitro, and one of the wrestlers they highlighted was Sting. Is that something that they would have to clear with him or with TNA, or do they not have to since they own the footage? Do they have to pay him royalties for the sales of the DVD? I was just wondering, since as you pointed out last week on Sound Off, he was never under contract with WWE. WWE owns all of the WCW footage, so they don't need permission from Sting or TNA to use their own material. That's number one. As far as whether or not they have to pay Sting, I honestly don't know, but my guess would be no, because he was never actually under contract with WWE. If the contracts for all of their performers spell out certain things about royalties, right, in the fine print, I would think that Sting would be exempt from that since he never actually signed one of those contracts. You know, maybe somebody with knowledge of contract law can chime in on this. Also, I just want to make mention of this. I'm glad Chuck brought up Sting, this Sting discussion from last week's show, because one of our esteemed listeners, I know many of you on Facebook know him, Bill Mitchell, he made a very good point. One of the reasons people debate whether Sting has ever technically worked for WWE or not is because he wrestled on that final Nitro show in 2001 from Panama City Beach. He had the match against Flair, and many consider that to be a WWE show, not a WCW show. WWE guys, their personnel were backstage running things that night. They were the ones overseeing the broadcast. I don't know that they were running the actual production truck and everything, but it's a valid point. You could technically say that means Sting worked for WWE, but I think that's splitting hairs. I don't see it that way, but you could make that argument, so I just wanted to bring that up. Ian from Dublin, Ireland writes in, "Hey, Solomonster, first of all, congratulations on your success with the Layfield Report. Your wrestling and Walking Dead columns are always a pleasure to read. My question is, has any wrestler, ever inspired you? Personally, CM Punk was inspirational to me. I used to be 20 stone 7 pounds, and now I'm 16 stone 3 pounds. This is all foreign to me. I don't know the conversion here. But apparently he was much bigger, and now he's a little bit smaller. Anyway, he says, his desire to speak his mind, CM Punk that is, and take his career and more importantly his destiny into his own hands was inspiring. In August of 2011, I started in the gym, and when things got tough, his promo kept me going, but it was his theme song, Cult of Personality, that pumped me up every time I entered the gym. Wrestling has always been shunned by the media, and I know some people don't like Punk, but this is a positive story regarding wrestling, and no matter how much of a heel Punk may be, I will always be a Punk guy. My birthday is on February 26th. Can I please have a shout-out?" Happy birthday, Ian, and thank you for sharing that story. Has there ever been a wrestler who inspired me? There have been wrestlers that have inspired me to change the channel. There have been wrestlers that have inspired me to buy a pay-per-view that maybe I wasn't planning on buying. Rock this week would not be one of those people. As a kid, Hulk Hogan inspired me to eat my vitamins. But as far as inspiring me to do something with my life, no. If you saw Wrestling with Shadows, though, somewhere out there, somewhere in this world, is a woman who was so inspired by Bret Hart, she decided to go to school for computer graphics. 16 years later, and I still don't get it. I don't get it. I hope I inspire all of you to send some questions for the mailbag, thesolemonster@gmail.com. thesolemonster@gmail.com is the email address. When emailing, try to include how long you've been listening to the show for, as many of you do, and I appreciate that. The year, the month, the episode number, if you can remember. It just lends a little bit of personality, I guess, to all of your emails, and I love hearing about it. So try to include that when you write in. Follow me on Twitter. @Solomonster is my handle on there. You can friend me on Facebook. Friendbook. Jesus Christ. Facebook. There you go. That's easy for me to say. Facebook.com/TheSolomonster. You can send me a friend request. Again, there's that photo of Vince and Shane McMahon, which is now actually up on SE Scoop, so the photo now has gone viral. But it's also on my Facebook page where you can just go to SE Scoops. Again, Shane, if you look at Shane, if you forget the hair, he kind of looks the same. He doesn't look old. But when you look at the hair, it's like, God damn, man, what are you doing? Come on now. Just, wow. Just go look at that photo. You can also subscribe to this show on iTunes. Type in Solomonster Sounds Off, and it is free. You can subscribe every time a new episode goes up. It will be automatically downloaded for you to your computer, your mobile device, wherever you want, quite frankly. It's very convenient, and you can get it on there, or just go directly to the source. Just go to seScoops.com, click right, click Save As, and you can keep the show forever if you want. Also, I am a contributor, as I've mentioned, at LayfieldReport.com, and I thank JBL for that. I am honored. And I have a wrestling column that goes up every week. I think Saturday is going to be the day for me. We've been trying to work out a schedule with myself and the few other wrestling contributors. So it looks like Saturday will probably be the day, you know, the weekend, basically, when my wrestling stuff goes up. So check out the Colt Cabana column that I did this morning. It's linked to on my Twitter, and it's on LayfieldReport.com as well. And my Walking Dead reviews as well, each and every Sunday night, except this week. This one will be up sometime on Monday. And again, it's helpful to me if you send feedback to JBL at JC Layfield on Twitter, just letting him know what you think. It's always appreciated. And that's about it. That's episode 260. I thank you for listening to my show. I'm humbled. We'll be back next weekend, episode 261. We'll have the postmortem on the Elimination Chamber in the first Raw officially on the road to WrestleMania. So that should be exciting. And in the meantime, enjoy your President's Day weekend here in the States. Those of you who do have the extra day off, as I do, enjoy it. They don't come around very often. And we'll see you right back here next weekend for episode 261. So until then, be well, stay safe, enjoy the Elimination Chamber. We'll see you right back here next week.
Let me tell you something, fella.
This is Joe from Northern Ireland.
Hi, I'm AJ Grimaldo.
And quite simply, the fastest 60 minutes on the internet.
The Solomonster sounds off on SEScoops.com.